have thought this would go to number one, Wendy. Not me.
What is this?
I don't know.
Jasmine, what is
it's
this?
It's whimsical.
This is actually a full orchestral antique music box that we're listening
to
right now.
Oh.
It's beautiful.
Well, I love antiques. We're going to talk antiques right now. The co-owner of the Broadway Antique Market, Chicago's oldest and largest multi-dealer antique store, is with us right now. Dwayne Scott Cerny. Dwayne, we had mentioned the cover of your book before you came in, Bill.
Selling Dead People's Things is the name of the book, and it is hands down the spookiest book cover I've ever seen in my life.
Score!
Boy, is it scary. I can't
look. Your attention.
When it gets dark outside, I can't look at your book. I just start to, I get shivers. So scary.
All right, listen. We all collect things. Bill, you collect toys.
Yeah.
Old and new.
Yeah.
Is that all you collect?
Yeah, kind of, I think.
I collect everything. I cannot let go of things for emotional reasons. That's very common, isn't it?
Yeah. It really is. I think it connects to a lot of different levels. You know, toys are really common, especially with guys.
Yeah.
About kind of buying back your childhood. You hear that all the time.
Yep.
But women with dolls.
I've never liked dolls.
No.
Living or dead dolls. Yeah. I didn't get into Barbie that much. I guess dolls are a big collectible. Purses.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah. Dwayne, would you agree that it's a combination of it's revisiting your childhood, but it's also going back and getting the elements that you were missing from your childhood?
Right? Absolutely. Yeah, the things that you felt you were cheated out of.
Yeah.
You know, when you were going through that Sears Roebuck catalog and making your list when you were 9 years old. And damn it.
My dad died when I was 10. I feel like I didn't know him that well. I mean, I should have at 10, but I don't feel I did. And he was a bit of a hoarder, so the basement was filled with a lot of stuff. And I found a bunch of old radios from the 50s and 60s. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to start collecting radios. And then I'm on the radio. So that's what I collect. And I display them. And I take very good care in displaying them like you do with your toys. But then other stuff are stupid, meaningless things. But I can't seem to purge.
Well, two things there. One, there are no coincidences. So you have the inherit these radios, and here you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And other things are, you may not yet have discovered or realized what some of these other objects might mean to you in the future that you're hanging on to.
Now, but that's
not
why.
Encouraging you, but,
no,
but we all do that, going like me. There's a reason why.
Yeah.
You hold on to it.
Yeah, this thing has come into my life. You know, but,
so where does collecting stop and hoarding begin? Where's the line?
I have a very simple answer to that. When you can no longer have people over.
That's it, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm heartbroken when I started watching Hoarders, and I was heartbroken by watching them because, you know, everything means something to them, and then they have like a sibling or a child that comes in to help them clean, and they freak out because you're touching all their stuff. I totally can get that because you have a system. There's, in your mind at least, you have a system. And I feel so sorry for those people.
Yeah. There's a lot of conflict there. But as I point out in the book, you know, there's high end hoarders and low end hoarders, and we're all kind of fixated on watching the low end train wreck of that show.
Right.
We won't get into the gross graphic nature of it, but again, it's a
yeah.
So you can't look away.
Right.
You know, but you know, you consider when there are individuals who have. Money, perhaps unlimited funds,
right.
You can collect whatever you want. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
I mean, it can still be a clutter of like a lot of great stuff.
Right.
But it's still like an overwhelming clutter that's consuming their life.
But explain this. A lot of times with hoarders or similar shows, somebody will have something. Well, they'll want magazines or newspapers or something, and they'll never really look at them. They'll just pile them up. They just want to have a lot of them. What's the comfort in having a lot of something if you're not really enjoying it?
Well, we always say collecting is funny. It's like one of something isn't all that interesting. Two, you know, you can breed them.
Mm-hmm.
three, it kind of becomes something else. Mm-hmm. And as it goes on, it just gets better. So when somebody says, you know, I've got 50 paperweights and it's taken me, you know, my lifetime to collect these, and it'll be, how did it start? Well, somebody gave it to me as a birthday present, or my aunt died and I got two of them. And so these collections start in lots of different ways.
Sure, of course.
And then they start to mean different things, I think, at different points in one's life. As far as, to go back to your other question about newspapers and reading, I'm an ephemera guy, and I brought some ephemera for us to talk about, too. Paper. No, sir. And it was not unfamiliar
with the
word.
Those are fancy words.
Fancy word. Ephemera.
That's a drug, is it not?
It is. It is, yeah. But you know, yeah. Only after the midday shift.
Okay, good. Thanks. Appreciate that.
But ephemera, paper people, especially newspapers, are, I'm going to read that later.
Yep.
Right?
But they're not.
But they think they're going. Listen, I have borderline hoarder blood in me. I really am ready to push over the edge at any moment, and I'm hoping to go the other way. But you will. I found articles that I ripped out of magazines because it's like, oh, this is a great recipe, or oh, I like the way this girl tied a scarf around her hair, and I think I'm going to go back to it, and I don't. And then all of a sudden, that pile becomes so overwhelming that you don't know where to start, and there you go with the hoarding.
Well, isn't the kind of the 21st century interpretation of that of like having an idea board.
Oh, sure.
People talk about that. Well, before that.
Yeah. Right. You're right.
Before that idea.
Yeah.
You collected the actual objects. I mean, how many people collect, you know, books? You find a book. I meant to read this. You know,
right.
Bill, you meant to read this.
Yeah. Right.
It goes on the stack. You know, well, kind of how it starts.
Yeah.
Really, that's kind of the understanding of that. It's people meaning to. It's almost having like a to-do list.
Sure.
But the to-do list is about objects.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I can imagine. Is there big money to be made in this sort of thing?
There's money to be made.
Not big money.
Well, you know, I've made a career of it.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, some 75 dealers in my store, and many of them have been with me for, you know, 10 or 20 years.
Yeah.
And they've supported their families. So, you know, I think that's, you can make a good living out of it. And, of course, you know, there's eBay, there's Etsy. Now there are just Instagram dealers.
Right.
Oh, now it's on Instagram?
And they just sell on Instagram. That's it. That's their platform, you know, for that. So technology has affected this.
Right.
And it's expanded it. And the other thing is that collectors have changed as it's been an aging population.
Yeah.
So you've got all these baby boomers with all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's got to go somewhere. And then you have these younger collectors who are coming in. I always say, like, in the store, we sell so much vintage vinyl.
Yeah.
Vintage clothing.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, 10, 15 years ago, records?
Right.
It's just something you've got a hernia. Moving from apartment to apartment. There's no value in records. Vinyl's not coming back. Who'd have thunk?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, boy, did
it. It's a huge thing. It's a huge thing. Last year's the 10th anniversary of Record Store Day. It was a national thing. Well, you guys know.
Right.
It was crazy. So to me, though, for young people, vinyl and vintage clothing are kind of like the gateway drugs.
Oh, collecting. That starts you.
Then you come into, you know, a store like mine.
Yeah.
Or any other, and you know, that's you're looking for, and you go, hey, that lamp is cool. I've never seen a lamp like that, you know. A cocktail shaker. You know, it'd be really cool to have a cocktail shaker. Wouldn't it be cool to have a cocktail? You know, suddenly you're exposed to these things that you didn't know it really existed before. But probably the overriding, I think, you know, kind of the most impressive thing that's going on and encouraging thing is that, you know, vintage is green. It's recyclable.
Yep.
It's sustainable.
Upcycle.
Right? Now, again, 10, 15 years ago, were dealers thinking about that? Were the public really thinking about that? Recycling meant recycling your newspapers
or,
you know, whatever. But young people now are going like, you know what? I want to live with less.
Yeah.
But what I want around me should be cool.
Sure. Yes, cool is the factor.
Cool is a huge factor. And again, you know, it's green, it's sustainable. You're not adding to a landfill. You're not contributing, you know, to your footprint on the planet is smaller. You know, themes we could run with. But that's a thing, and that's changed the market. And I think that's also why it's expanded the base.
Dwayne Scott Cerny is our guest. His book is called Selling Dead People's Things. We'll continue this conversation in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are chatting with Dwayne Scott Cerny, co-owner of the Broadway Antique Market. That's 6130 North Broadway in Chicago,
is that correct?
Chicago's oldest and largest multi-dealer antique store. I love that because everybody has a different style and flair, so you get different things in different booths. And you always knew you were going to have this store, didn't you?
Yeah, kind of. It's an odd thing. When I was contemplating, you know, writing my memoir, which is essentially what this is as an excuse to tell some, like, really great, you know, true Chicago stories, because this is such a Chicago book, and we have to talk about that. I just kind of knew. there's a early story in the book about I would go and run around the neighborhood and get the neighbor kids to go and basically consign the toys they weren't using.
Really?
Where I came up with this idea, I don't know. And then and everyone's like, oh, sure, you can take it. Barbie's Dream House falling apart. Sure, take it.
You know, yeah.
In my little wagon. And it did that. And I called it the porch store, because it was set up on my parents' concrete porch.
Perfect.
Right? And I said, then you know, adults would drive by and ask. If I could knew anybody who did aluminum siding, could I recommend a good roofer? So, you know, like, bad branding, right, know, for this 8-year-old, you know, going like, dang, but I made money from it. So all the kids had a paper route, and I had this little consignment gig going on. And so it was that that behavior was being reinforced.
Yeah, oh,
that's that there's so something funny to this.
And why is it that other people's stuff is usually cooler than your own stuff? So you want to consign, trade or whatever.
Right, yeah. Well, we want what we don't have.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
That's it.
And, yeah, and then once you have it, you go,
Now I need something else.
And that is what happens. So weird collections that you've come across where either people bring them in or you go to an estate sale. Some of the weirder things... prosthetic limbs people collect those?
What we've had in the store for the longest time is a want list.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not necessarily going to have what you want today, but as soon as I say, oh, we're not going to get that, one walks in.
Sure,
that happens
course.
All the time. So I've learned, don't say that. So we create a want list. And a gentleman came in one time and looked around, and he says, I don't see what I'm looking for. And I said, what are you looking for? And he said, artificial limbs and railroad timetables. Now, you know, I'm a poetry major, and I went, this guy just wrote a freaking poem. You know? That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. Now, I have over the years found him some artificial limbs that he did not have.
Uh-huh.
He has them in his living room.
Oh,
really?
Well, that's where you
put them. Of course, of course.
I bet it's kind of cool, though, if it's displayed properly. Yeah. I know that's twisted, but it's art. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
You may not stay at this place long.
Well, okay.
But you'll visit.
I wouldn't date him, but yeah.
And then railroad timetables, a little easier to find. But in my mind, where do those two things connect?
Yeah, I don't know.
What is that about? You know, is this some reincarnated railroad
running to catch a train?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know,
but
I have
he
to
only
go
had
there.
One
I
leg, have, so he didn't
I have
make
to go
it.
There. So it's the juxtaposition of things that people collect that kind of I find engaging.
My sister bought us a old time Victrola for a wedding gift. I love that thing. You have to crank it up. They have some needles that you can change, some actual metal needles, but they also have wooden ones that they used at the beginning to.
Sure, of course.
It's unbelievable. So I like stuff like that. My kids have gotten into antiques because, you know, for a while it was just junk, but you can look at things so uniquely now.
Yeah, and when you look at, I always say that I don't buy anything new except food, you know, and even that I kind of go, but I can't eat some old food, because first off, things were so much better made. It's as far as the quality of it,
true,
we
can
go down
it?
The list on that, right?
Yeah.
And the design element, there's just things that were just brilliant
right.
designs. You're going from. Yeah, again, from Victorian to arts and crafts to Art Deco to mid-century modern, boom, 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 right?
Yeah.
Which is that totally influences. That was like, if you think about the 30s, their perception of the future is what we're now living in.
It is, isn't it?
Right?
Yeah.
This is all kind of a Fritz Lang thing that's going on now, right? So there's just so much more to it than, you know, the spatula aisle at IKEA.
Right.
Not that there isn't some good design now, and they're
right.
You know, before people start calling in and screaming at us, but just to reflect back and look, and there's no way you would know about this, except through if you seen it in a store or obviously in books, and kind of my point with even writing this book was that I looked at the whole marketplace and I said like 99% of the books out there are all about like what something is, identifying it, and what it's worth. And that's not what this book is.
No. Individual stories.
Yeah, yeah. Which was, to me, like, you know, that's interesting, but not that interesting. Because it's always the, I want to know about the object and the person behind it.
Yeah.
And the why of it. So this was a way to go in. Basically, I take you into these estate sales and hoarder houses. You come with me. Come with me. That was the whole notion of it.
Well, that makes the object so much more interesting if you have some background as to who owned it prior and what their story was. It gives it a more dimension.
Yeah, a bit of a detective story.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, not everything has a story.
Yeah.
Or you don't find out. You know, it's not necessarily a satisfying ending to it. And this is a business of endings.
Right.
Isn't that sad, though, when you think about that?
No.
Or you're keeping them alive?
I don't. I always say that, you know, we're the temporaries. The objects go on and on and on. Right? So, you know, these toys that you cherish, your vintage toy collection, you didn't buy them new, you got them.
Many of them have been used,
have previous owners.
Right.
Have had previous owners. You're the present owner.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll go on to your kids or your relatives or, you know.
My kids have already explained they have no interest in them.
They're going to really good
really?
Yeah.
We had that talk recently.
Yeah.
When I go, who wants what?
Began with the word ka-ching. Right.
See, but that's something that, like, that's why I hung on to these radios my dad had. That's something I feel they're going to keep maybe one or two individual pieces, aren't they?
I don't think so.
Oh, no.
I don't think they will.
What I love, though, is this creates a dialogue.
Right, right.
I've talked to people and they say, you're coming to the store. I'm not interested in any of this stuff. I get dragged into
it.
Yeah. You know, the wife drags the husband in, the husband drags the wife in. It goes both ways. Right? I don't know any of this stuff. And it ends up they're the ones that become obsessed about something.
Right.
You know,
can I ask you a quick question about the guy who has all the artificial limbs hanging in his living room? Is he on Airbnb? Because he needs to warn people if they're renting out his apartment, there's going to be a surprise in the living room.
yes, only bring your left shoe.
Right. Yeah, okay. You'll understand when you get here.
What is your obsession right now, just very quickly? And does it change?
No, I'm still pretty much a paper person. I like... I like sideshow photography.
Oh yeah,
one of my little niches. I like Charles Eisenman, who is the quintessential
the circus sideshow.
Circus, you know, back then we used the word freak photographer, but he was, and his images are stunning. What he did. But I also like alternative performers who are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
Divine was probably the biggest one, so I collect Divine posters.
Oh, nice.
But not from films, from like club appearances from all over the world. I like to say that I like to collect things that other people don't collect, but I don't think there is such a thing.
Yeah.
You're collecting lint. Klaus Nomi, I'm a huge Klaus Nomi fan. People should Google Klaus Nomi. He was brilliant. So obscure things. Yeah, things that kind of entertain me.
And if people are into finding things, go to the Broadway Antique Market. It's 6130 North Broadway. I have to go there. I have to look around. I have to see what history
You'd
is
love
there.
It. It's really a great place.
And read this book. It tells stories selling dead people's things. Yes, they may have passed along, but their stuff keeps going. I like that. That's really the true upcycle. Their things keep going.
That just keeps going, yeah. And if people need more information, there's a website for the book.
Give the website.
SellingDeadPeople'sThings.com. You can read sample chapters of the book, one of which was in the New York Times.
Oh, nice.
Congrats.
Not bad for your first book.
And some great blurbs from wonderful Chicagoans who've come out to support this book.
Mm-hmm.
Nate Berkus, designers Leslie Hinman, Richard Wright. And it's such a Chicago book because there's just so many great Chicago stories that you will not hear
Excellent.
Anywhere else.
Good. Congrats.
The Carbonaro effect. He likes you, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's a doll. Michael Carbonaro, yeah.
The book is called Selling Dead People's Things. It's available wherever better books are sold. Dwayne Scott Cerny is his name. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.